Let me go back and see if I can paint the picture as to how it all began. We, for many, many years, Wisconsin was mostly just a vast area where there was fur trading and a lot of Native Americans and some French traders and some French missionaries, and all that went on for a number of years. And it wasn't until 1836 that we became a territory. And at that time, we began to see a number of people coming into the state. The first round of people coming, settlers coming into Wisconsin, essentially came from New England, and many of them came from upstate New York. And they had been farmers there in those New England states. And they, and to use the language of the day, the land had pretty much worn out, and they moved west. And they came here because they had discovered that in southern Wisconsin, and that would be, a line from about Green Bay to, maybe Eau Claire and south, was a land that would grow wheat. And by that time, Illinois had become a major wheat-producing state, as had Ohio. And, of course, the country was expanding rapidly, and the interest in wheat and for flour was on the increase. And so these farmers, and especially those from upstate New York, where they had been dairy farmers, they came here and they did not do anything with dairying. They immediately went into wheat production. And so we had, by the 1850s, and we became a state in 1848, by the 1850s, 1860s, the start of the Civil War, we had become a major wheat-growing state. Literally, thousands of acres of wheat were grown in southern Wisconsin at that time. And one of the interesting things, if you fly, as you probably have and as have I, fly over southern Wisconsin, you can still pick out a lot of the little mill ponds. And these mill ponds were the result of mills being built with water power, and they ground the wheat into flour. So wheat growing was flourishing. Civil War, 1861 to 1865. By 1862, in the middle of the Civil War, Wisconsin was the number two wheat-growing state in the nation. Can you believe that? And we were shipping wheat all over the place during the Civil War. Well, then, by the time we got to, 1870, wheat began to falter. These farmers did not realize, they should have, but they didn't, that you cannot grow the same crop on the same field year after year without any fertilization, without any doing anything, just planting wheat after wheat after wheat. The yields declined. And an insect came in called the cinch bug and began sucking the life out of the wheat plant. And a rust came in, a disease that was destroying acres of wheat. And now all of a sudden, the wheat wasn't doing well at all. And these farmers now, who had become accustomed to making a lot of money growing wheat, were beside themselves. They were stuck with wheat not doing well and not knowing what to do. A transition time in the 1870s. And at that time, a lot of interesting things happened. We began the hop growing. The beer industry was booming in Milwaukee. And another. I wrote a book on breweries of Wisconsin. There were breweries all over the state, and they needed hops for the brewing industry. And several counties in southern Wisconsin turned to hop growing. And that it never began to replace wheat growing, but it was important. So here we've got now the beer industry booming and the hops growing, but farmers, they just still weren't making it. There were some sheep. People began growing sheep for wool. But it was a fellow by the name of William Dempster Hoard. And anybody in farming today knows about Hoard's Dairyman magazine. It was William Dempster Hoard that came here in the 1880s from New York. And he was a proponent of dairy farming. He saw in Wisconsin, with the climate that we had, with our ability to grow forages and pasturing in the summertime, that dairy farming might flourish. But what happened? And it didn't happen overnight, even with Horde traveling all around the state and promoting the idea that Queen Cow will replace King Wheat, as corny as that sounds. That's what he was talking about. It really didn't take hold for one interesting reason. Many of these wheat farmers had become accustomed to only working in the summertime because in the wintertime they could rest and grow wheat in the wintertime. And if they had a cow or two, and some of them did, most of them did, they declared that that was women's work. No man should be caught dead fussing around with those smelly cows. And the butter that was made in those days and the cheese that was made in those days was made in the farm kitchen. There were no cheese factories. There were no creameries. All the whatever milk there was cared for in the farm kitchen. And so it took from about 1870 to almost 1890, almost the turn of the century, before dairy farming really caught on. And when it did, something really interesting happened. When these men decided that, yes, we could make money dairy farming, they began building cheese factories all over the state. Every little crossroads had a cheese factory. We had several thousands of them at one time making cheese. An interesting switch once they decided that they could do the work. But then they were faced with, well, what are we going to do in the winter? Well, now they began building these massive barns. Oh, my gosh. I've written a book on it called Barns of Wisconsin, where I talk about these beautiful, beautiful old barns that were constructed in the late 1800s and early 1900s. The men, once they took hold of the idea that dairying was something that would work in Wisconsin, they built these barns not for something that's going to last for 10 years, but something that would last for generations. They built sturdy, sturdy old barns. They're beautiful. And they also, these farmers now, began to look for ways of feeding their cattle in the winter, because if they're going to make money on dairying, you can't just milk them in the summertime and dry them off in the wintertime. You had to milk them year-round. And so then we saw the birth of the silo. Oh, my gosh, it sounds so silly today when we say that the silo was an important development, but it surely was, because silage, corn silage initially, allowed farmers to have something to feed their cattle in the wintertime. And it was not, silos were not readily accepted. In fact, Farm Journal magazine, which came out of Philadelphia, I guess it still does, it's still printed there. Farm Journal editorial said, do not feed your cattle silage, all their teeth will fall out, and no cheese factory will buy your milk from cattle that are fed silage. How crazy that was. So there was this reluctance, but most of the farmers by the early 1900s saw silage as one of the good ways of providing feed in the winter, along with the development of alfalfa and other forage crops to make into hay that could be stored in these beautiful barns that were built so that the cattle were housed on the bottom, on the lower level, and the hay was stored in the upper level. And so by 1910, interestingly enough, Wisconsin became the dairy state. New York State had been number one in dairy production, milk and cheese. And now in 1910, Wisconsin became the leading cheese and milk producing state in the nation. And to this day, we are still the leading producer of cheese in the nation. California took the milk prize away from us a few years ago, but we have maintained since 1910 the leadership in producing cheese. And that is a very brief history of how we moved from growing wheat to being a dairy state.
Take me way back. Tell us how the environment, the landscape, was sculpted to be able to nourish an agricultural commodity.
Sure. In the book that I wrote on the history of Wisconsin agriculture, I have a whole section in there on the early geology of our state. And to understand why we are a dairy state today, one needs to go back and think about how the state became what it is in terms of its soil types and in terms of its terrain and in terms of its climate. And the far north, from about the third of a third of Wisconsin in the north, was more suited to forestry. It took a long time took a while for people to realize that. But two-thirds of the state was well-suited. And the glaciers, last major ones, receded 10,000 years ago. When they receded, they left behind some wonderfully good soil, especially in southern Wisconsin, some less valuable soil in central Wisconsin, where I grew up. The glaciers also developed the streams and the lakes and all the rest of it. So we owe a lot to what these glaciers brought for us. Now, southwestern Wisconsin, the Driftless area, that had not been subjected to the last glacier. So that has a bit of a different geologic history in southwestern Wisconsin. So the climate, with cold winters and warm summers, seemed to work pretty well for cattle, and the fact that we could grow forages and have pasture and grow corn and all the rest of it lent itself pretty well to dairy farming. One of the interesting things right now is for some people it's controversial, but mostly it's not. Climate change is going to have an effect on our agriculture that's probably more profound than we realized at the time. That's mm-hmm. another topic. I would ask that people who are interested in agriculture in this state, and I can't imagine anybody that's not, it would be worthwhile to do a little digging, because our history of agriculture is absolutely fascinating. I've just touched the surface. I've not talked about ginseng, and not talked about hemp, and I've not talked about canning products and all the rest of it. We are a fantastically interesting state, agriculturally speaking, as well in a lot of other ways, too.
Dr. Jerry Apps gave us only a glimpse of our state's rich agricultural history. He's published 25 books and been featured in interviews and documentaries nationwide. Check out jerryapps.com for more. From the southern end of the world's longest barn, here in Madison, I'm Bobby Joe Burgum.